Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker and Matt, your hosts here. And do not let your hearts be troubled. If you were worried about us, we did not die. We are still here. It's been a couple weeks. Had just some things going on. Couldn't get the podcast in, but we are back doing another episode now. So really excited to be back in our element. Me and Matt right here on a Saturday morning talking about some health and fitness.
Yes. Yeah, it's we've been off a couple weeks. One was planned. Went to competing in a powerlifting meet on the 22nd. And then we I had a family member pass away, my uncle. And so I was fairly close to him, so I had to attend that the following week, which would have been the 1st, I think, because today's the 8th, right?
Yes, the 8th.
Yeah, yeah. So, been a few weeks, but...
the week before that, you were a little under the weather.
That's right. I was under the weather. I forgot about that. Yeah, so 3 weeks, hasn't it? It's been 3 weeks?
It's been a while.
Wow.
People were probably getting worried.
Yeah, they're probably like, what's going on? Yeah, that's right. I wasn't feeling well. We're back. And
So Matt, you mentioned that powerlifting meet.
Yes.
You did. You want to tell us a little bit about how that went?
So my friend and coach couldn't come, so I had to have my brother there. I'm talking about Parker, by the way. And so it was interesting. You know, I'm not a known commodity in the powerlifting circuit. You know, I haven't been in it for very long, and it was interesting talking about the nature of men. But I was working out with my brother was kind of helping me out. By the way, he's terrible, and he has no problem mentioning that. But and so we're just kind of warming up in the back, and there's these guys obviously knew each other, and there's probably five guys, all much larger than me. You know, they were anywhere from 235 to, 270, I would say. And they were the way powerlifting meets work is the opening lifts start with the lighter weights, and you have, you'll have usually an ABC circuit. And it's not a circuit, but around flanks, yeah. Mm-hmm. And in each one, you'll start with the lighter lifts, and then you'll go to the heavier lifts, right? And it can be rearranged on who's lifting based on what you did the flight before. And so the opening was, some people, they haven't connected names to people. And so... I'm working out there. No one's really paying attention to me. Which I get it. And I have the second heaviest opening lift. So I opened up with 336. Went up and down fine. And I had a couple guys come up and start talking to me. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. So then I went up for my 352. I hit 352. And then I had more guys coming up and talking to me. And I had one guy come up and talk to me. He came up to this meet from Texas, and he was a big man. I was looking up at him the whole time. He was probably 6'4", 6'5". And he goes, you entered the open? I'm like, no. He says, well, you beat me by 2.5 kilograms. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's cool. He goes, yeah, I looked you up on Instagram. So I went from no one even looking in my direction to all these guys starting to come up and talking to me and fist pumping me and all this stuff about, so this is kind of the nature of men. They kind of like, they're not good as men are. They're not the best listeners at times, but you have to kind of earn their respect. Right. And there's a good quality to that, but They don't like to be snowed. But it was interesting. We put in the our lifts, and then all the guys were coming up that I've never met before, you know, giving me fist bump. Because in the second flight, I was the second heaviest lift again. And then, so it was good. It was good. I enjoyed it. And, you know, at that particular tournament, I had the privilege of setting the state record for my age and weight. So be specific. And in not only that, which is kind of going to correlate to our main topic today, but I set it in the non-tested. Okay. Which we're going to kind of talk about that in our main topic a little bit, about, because some of these guys were, I would say they were on something.
So by tested, he means that this was a non-tested event, which means it was not required to pass a drug test.
Correct.
In order to be scored. Correct. In this event.
Right.
So he was competing against guys who could have been taking any number of substances, including steroids. And the general thought is that if it's an untested event, then almost everybody in it is taking some sort of enhancers,
yeah,
some sort of steroids, because yeah, otherwise they would enter into meets that are drug tested.
Yeah.
And so it's safe to assume the vast majority of those guys were taking some sort of enhancers.
Well, they were bigger than the guys that I competed against at the drug tested, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
What was nice about it, there was, you know, I think the last event I competed, there was two guys that were within my age group, but not necessarily in my weight group. But so that was, you know, I was like, that was kind of bummed. But this group had about six or seven that were 50 and older. None of them that were in my, I was the lightest of them. They were all heavier than me. So they're all in the 110, 125 kilogram categories. And, you know, I had the privilege to meet the world record and world championship holder, Brian. I forget Brian's last name. But his name, he had won the world championships in Greece. I think it was in Athens, Greece, I think. And for the USPA. And this man squatted 440. And he was 6'4"?
Kilograms, right?
440 in pounds.
He squatted 440 pounds?
Yeah, 440 pounds.
That's not that much.
Yeah, well, he's 69 years old.
Oh, at 69?
69.
He squatted
440? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, 69. He deadlifted, I think, 460, and he benched like 315 or 325, somewhere around there. And 6'4, 69 years old. That's pretty impressive at 69.
At 69? That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, 69. Yeah, so. Now, we had the younger dudes up there squatting 600.
Wow. Right?
Yeah. And we had one guy get injured squatting 630. He, that was a little scary, you know, because his knee went out of him, and his spotters basically had to get that bar up on the thing. 630 pounds, is all, even for four guys, is a lot to get up on that bar, because you're in an awkward position trying to get that up. So it was a little scary, but because he, you know, his knee just gave out. But yeah, outside of that, I've always found it very fun. I enjoy the day. I really do enjoy the day. I enjoyed it a lot more this time than I did the last time. This being my second meet, I was able to relax more, understanding what's going on.
Knew what to expect.
Yeah, I knew what to expect. And so I was able to kind of focus a little bit better. And I will say that since you weren't there, I did hit the smelling salts this time. And I think it was on my second lift, I smelled it too close, and I felt like I just blew a hole through my head. I was like, going up on the snag, oh my gosh. But it went well. I've discovered that my eccentric's too slow. I've got to work on that, and I'm looking forward to the state championships in April.
Well, good. That ought to be exciting. I think that sounds like it was very successful.
Yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
New state record, new, new meet PR, obviously. You've hit more than that in the gym before, but
yeah.
But in terms of a meet, first time hitting through at 352, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a different dynamic, gym versus the meet. I'm not sure how to. I'd have to think about how it's different, but it's a little different, you know.
Yeah, definitely. You're not in control of every aspect of the situation. You are when you're in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
You can warm up at your own pace. You can, you know, do the lift when you want to do the lift on the bench that you're used to and all that stuff. Versus, you know, a new bench you'd never been on before, and you know, your name gets called, you've got 1 minute and you've got to do the lift then, whether you're ready or not.
Yeah,
that's when you have to do the lift. And sometimes your warm-ups aren't timed perfectly, you know. And so there's a lot of elements that change it when it's in the meet. But you also, you know, it's a meet.
Yeah.
And you've kind of got an extra adrenaline pump because of that. And I think that helps a little bit too.
I had my Snickers bar.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
And you mentioned something that reminded me. I didn't quite time it perfect. I was trying to time it just where I hit 335 in the warm-up area around 10 minutes before. And I hit 315. I hit 315, and do I have time to hit 335? Because I wanted to give a little time to do that. And I realized, no, I'm going up in like 5 minutes, so... So it's kind of hard to walk because the way the meet was set up, the where all the men were sitting, and they had in areas where the lifters sit, and then the platform was on another room. Okay, so you were in the back, and they had a clock there, but I was trying to watch it at the same time, and then suddenly I could tell it's like, oh man, our group's already started, so I just went over. And so anyway, you know, it worked out good. And I really, really want to get one in town. So I had a lot of people that would come see me. You know, I don't expect people to travel, you know, 5 hours to see me, because that's, everyone has lives and stuff like that. Now if I go to nationals, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move into our Fit Focus. So I knew the minute I saw this that we had to talk about this on the podcast. An article, and I'll just read you the headline, speaks for itself. Says, is cockroach milk the future of nutrition? Scientists say it's more nutritious than cow's milk.
I wish I would have read this for the first time on the podcast, because I laughed hysterically when I read it. So
I sent it to him just about 15 minutes before we got on the air, and he started cracking up, and I said, save it for the podcast, Matt.
Yeah. The term superfood is commonly used in fitness and wellness circles, often referred to as nutrition dense foods like dark leafy green berries and nuts, which I would not call that a superfood.
No.
It's not a superfood.
And that's part of the problem is you've got two major groups, right? You've got the group that is kind of the traditional nutritional advice that does think those things, and the scientists and the dietitians and all those people that think a certain way, you know, they think that superfoods are those foods. They're also the same people who are saying, oh, maybe we should drink cockroach milk, maybe we should have plant-based meats, maybe we should have all these things, right? And then you've got the group of the people like us that understand the whole foods. You know, they understand why cow's milk is extremely good for us.
I would say cow's milk is a superfood. Eggs are a superfood. I mean, they're like meat superfood. You know, they do everything they can to replace these components. And we won't get into why, but we've talked enough about that. But the fact that the first sentence is the superfoods that are considered superfoods, dark leafy greens, berries, and nuts is commonly referred to as superfoods. Not even close. If you listened to our show several weeks ago, that might have been the last show we did, where we ranked things like this. We gave letter grades to things like this. And I don't think dark leafy greens, berries, and nuts got into the A category.
I don't think so. What's your grade for cockroach milk, Matt?
F.
Well, here, what it says here, that buffalo milk was previously the most calorie-rich mammalian milk, I guess for mammals, and they found that cockroach milk contains three times the caloric density of buffalo milk.
How many cockroaches would it take to get a glass of milk?
That's a great question. I wonder if you milk a cockroach, what do you get?
I would say a drop. A
drop. At most.
I mean you got to get a lot of cockroaches. I mean, and so that means you need to breed them. You know?
Well, see, here's the thing. It says cockroach milk. How do you know it's actually cockroach milk?
Yeah.
I mean, you milk a cow, you see milk in the cow. I mean, how do you know what you're getting out of the cockroaches, the milk?
I don't know. I mean, this is all news to me.
Build a cockroach farm. Have 10 million cockroaches in there. You get one drop from each cockroach, and now you've got a gallon of cockroach milk.
Well, it says here, is cockroach milk is not yet available for human consumption.
Dang.
But darn, I was hoping damn I could it.
Go grab Gosh. A gallon and
I mean, try it out. Well, Parker has this little business where he provides raw milk, and a lot of the members.
I would consider it a nonprofit.
Nonprofit, yeah, 100%. Almost to your detriment. But he does a little, not even a business, but, you know, a nonprofit where he brings in raw milk. And, you know, when you think about cockroach milk, you know, maybe you want to start your own little cockroach farm and bring in cockroach milk versus, you know, cow raw milk. But it says here, you know, the biggest barrier being production. I wonder what production looks like.
You know, my question on this is, like, are these articles really meant to be taken seriously? It's a genuine question. I mean, I don't care if it is the most nutritious or not. You're not going to get people to drink it, nor should they.
I mean, why? Okay, well, let's say that was even true. Let's say cockroach milk is the most nutritious. By how far? And what great positives would be worth it? The amount of time and effort it would take to produce something like this, which we already can see that you would need an exorbitant amount of cockroaches to produce a gallon, right? And when we already have the processes in place, okay, the cows exist, they produce milk plentifully, okay? You need one cow to produce, I mean, like, think about what a cow, you said 6 gallons a day can produce, okay? One cow. All right, how many cockroaches is it going to take to produce 1 gallon of cockroach milk?
Oh, I have no idea.
Just look at the size of them. They're tiny.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're cockroaches.
I would think they would have some type of parasites in them.
Probably.
And I don't think they would be great for gut health.
I couldn't imagine. Uh-uh.
Why are we looking into things like this when we already have the means in place? There's no need. There's not a demand for a substance to be produced in place because we're missing something, right? We have the production in place that suffices, right? Granted, right now it's pasteurized milk, but yeah, I'm just thinking there's no need for this to start up. So that tells me there's other motives at play.
Who knows what they are? This kind of reminds me of Jim Gaffigan. You know who Jim Gaffigan is? Mm-hmm. He does a bit about all the different kinds of milk that have been created. You know, he's like, first there was cow's milk, and then, you know, they come out with almond milk and I don't even know what all the
oat
other,
milk.
Oat milk and... Yeah. I mean, you name it.
You name anything. You can, like, pull milk out of all these bizarre things.
Coconut milk.
Coconut milk, yeah.
You name it. Milk out of all these things. And, you know, I think the joke is like, oh, the next thing we come up with is rope milk. make it out of rope, you know, and something dumb like that. But it reminds me of this because, like, you're just finding new things to try to replace the actual product that is good for you, which is milk. Cow's milk from other other mammals similar to us in their the makeup of their milk, which is cows, goats,
and
sheep.
They make a bold claim here, and I want you've read this and I haven't, but the bold claim here that they think that cockroach milk can be up to 3 times more nutritious than cow's milk. Mm-hmm. That's a bold claim.
That is. That's extreme. Three times more
when cow's milk is like, I mean, and I'm talking raw milk. Okay. Let's clarify this. Cow's milk is, probably in my opinion, a superfood on the planet. And, yes, the whole thing about, all the fear tactics around cow's milk is all BS. So, but that's just a very bold claim. So my question is, do they talk about how they measured, how they compared? Are they showing any of the ingredients in this?
You know, I tried to look and I couldn't really find any details. And that's kind of the worrisome part about it is that they're not providing the details behind it.
Yeah.
So who knows? I don't know if we're going to be, walking in grocery stores next week, looking at cockroach milk on the shelf or not. But either way, everyone can see through this. It doesn't pass the smell test. Cockroach milk is not something that we're going to recommend to consume. And everyone should understand just through common sense that cockroach milk should not be something that's consumed.
Well, are we going to chalk this up to a story that's comes out and disappears and we'll never see cockroach milk?
I would say that's probably true. I don't know why they do that sometimes, release a story, and then don't follow up on it. Who knows? Then again, maybe down the line.
Or is there a bigger agenda to kind of numb the public to the idea that eating bugs is good?
Well, that's what I was about to say. You have seen a lot in the recent years about eating bugs,
mm-hmm.
and the nutritional density being higher in bugs, and how we can create these bug farms and feed bug meat to people and bug products, and it would be very nutritious. And this could just be another step in the propaganda to, like you said, numb the public and normalize the consumption of bugs.
Yeah.
But maybe it'll stick, but I don't really think it will. If they're going to get people to eat bugs, the easier way to do it would be to just start putting that stuff in processed foods where people don't even understand that's what's inside. Name it something that people can't understand, put it in processed foods where people don't even know it's in there, and nobody will ask questions.
Yeah, my question is who are the scientists? And
scientists say, Matt.
Yeah, scientists.
Don't you know scientists say?
Scientists say, follow the science.
Yeah.
We've come to understand that the professional community, especially around health and medicine, has taken a massive hit in the last 4 years, 5 years on trust.
Well, that's the public-facing trust. The trust never should have been there to begin with.
100%.
Because of the problems that it's had. I mean, going back essentially to its inception.
Yeah.
The mainstream medical industry didn't exist 150 years ago.
Right.
There wasn't. Was there doctors? Yeah, but it was like, I cut my leg off. I need to go to the doctor to see if the doctor can sew it up and help me survive.
Right.
It wasn't like, oh, doctor, I need some medicine because my cholesterol's high. it just...
right.
It didn't exist that way back then. And so when it started existing, I think from the beginning it's had bad intentions.
Yeah.
Which is to make the public less healthy, make the public dependent on that medical care.
Right.
Which you sell to them, and then you make money.
Yeah.
Let me give you an example. You start a drug company. You need to sell your drugs, but you don't have anybody to sell them to. So you get some scientists and you pay the scientists a bunch of money to put out articles that say, this drug is a really good drug and it cures this disease and it's a good drug and everybody should take it. Okay. Well, now you have the public on your side. So then, because we had to trust the scientists, right?
Right.
So then what you do, you go to the doctors. And you tell, you give the doctors some money. You say, hey, I think maybe you want to start prescribing my drug, right? Not anybody else's drug. And here's your money to do it, right? Oh, well, okay then. And then people come in the office and, oh, well, I heard about this drug or whatever. I had this thing going on. Doctor, well, yeah, well, we've got the perfect thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me, this drug right here, right? Mm-hmm. And he's going to get a little kickback from it. And then next thing you know, you have a company that created a drug that doesn't even necessarily work that is making a ton of money. Now, they're funneling it back to the scientists and the doctors and you know, high up people. I mean, we're not talking about just your everyday, like, doctor down the street necessarily. Sometimes we are in some cases, but we're talking about high up people that are putting down these orders in these companies. But it's all about the flow of the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about lobbying, you know, can you pay people to convince people to buy your product, even if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's like testimonials, you know, how many times, like paid testimonials, you know, you see pro athletes and stuff on TV saying to go buy something.
Yeah.
You don't realize they got paid millions of dollars to say that. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But people will go buy it because they say that.
Well, I mean, they've discovered in the Kamala campaign that all the superstars or movie stars that got up and spoke got paid millions of dollars.
Exactly.
I'm like, well, how authentic is that?
Not at all.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
And yeah.
That concept in our society causes a lot of problems. And that is a whole other rabbit hole. But
yeah, there's been several, just in the last several months, doctors that are being exposed, not just for the COVID vaccine, but for all types of diseases, doing exactly that. They get money if they say someone has something, and they can then prescribe the drug, right? They get paid to prescribe those drugs, a good chunk. And the more you prescribe them, the more percentage you get. Now, there's something wrong with that.
Same way childhood vaccines work with pediatricians.
Yep.
Right? Pediatricians get massive kickbacks every time that they administer childhood vaccines. So it's no coincidence that all these pediatricians highly, highly, highly recommend all these vaccines, and a lot of times won't even let you be a patient if you don't do the vaccines.
Yes.
And that's the reason, is because they don't make the money off of you if you don't do them.
That's right. So my doctors always hate me because I'm always turning everything down for my kids. Like when they're growing up, I'm like, now I think I got the very early ones that have been around a long time, which I probably wouldn't have in hindsight. But probably when back in the late 90s, you know, where I had to get a religious, a religious exemption.
Mm-hmm.
For my kids to go to public school because they wanted certain vaccines. And I'm like, no, this is not necessary. That was years and years before COVID, but probably 15 to 20 years before then. So the point is, the medical system and how it's all set up is definitely incentivized. And so this is where you get into the problem with these stories. You know, it's like trying to dumb us down to prepare us for something.
Yep. That's right. Stay vigilant, guys. You know, keep your ears peeled and think very critically about everything that you see, everything you hear, everything you read. All right. So let's move on from that to another study that I came across this week that I had to really look into because I didn't exactly believe it when I saw it. And this was a study that was kind of resurrected that was done in 1993, so some time ago. And the study was looking into muscle ultrastructure after strength training with placebo or anabolic steroid. So right there, the headline kind of grabbed my attention. because they're testing anabolic steroids versus placebo,
mm-hmm.
which in 1993, you might make the argument and say, well, there wasn't quite as much literature out there about anabolic steroids as there is now. So it makes sense why they may have tested it. But the reason that it's been coming back up is because of the findings that they found. So what they did in this study, they took 8 weeks. They took 13 subjects. Now, they don't say the demographics of these subjects, which I think could potentially be important,
mm-hmm.
but they don't say, so we don't know. And they gave them a weekly injection of either a placebo or a nandrolone decanate dosage, 200 milligrams followed by 100 milligrams weekly. Now, the placebo group was still injected. They just were injected with what is essentially saline solution. So essentially nothing, right? Sugar water. Like they didn't really get anything. And then the other group got the anabolic steroids. And so everybody in the study thought that they were getting anabolic steroids.
Mm-hmm.
It was only the people in the placebo group that didn't actually receive them. So it was what they call a double-blind study, right? So I think double-blind study means the people involved in the study don't know who's got the placebo and who's got the steroids, and also the people that are analyzing the findings also don't know who's got the placebo and who's got the steroids. So the result, or what they did to track results, was before and after. So before they took their first dose, and then after the 8 weeks was completed, they did a needle biopsy taken from the muscle to study the morphometric characteristics of the fibers and the ultrastructure. So what they found was that the capillary ultrastructure and capillary supply were not changed after the training period. They did find that the fiber cross-sectional area increased significantly only after steroid treatment. But they found that in none of the measured parameters was any difference found between placebo and steroid treatment. So that was kind of scientific. Let's break that down a little bit. So the fiber cross-sectional area, that essentially, think about that as muscle mass,
mm-hmm.
right? The area of your muscle fibers is larger,
mm-hmm.
gaining muscle mass. Capillary ultrastructure and capillary supply, more of like a blood flow,
mm-hmm.
right? They found this increase significantly in the fiber cross-sectional area, the muscle mass, in these people, and in none of those parameters was there any difference found between placebo and steroid. So everybody in this study put on muscle mass in 8 weeks, and there was no difference of how much muscle mass they put on, whether they got the placebo or whether they got the steroid.
Mm-hmm.
That was essentially the conclusion of this study.
Now, we're both, you know, natural. We believe in, longevity, right? And so we don't utilize steroids. So when they said that the drug of choice was nandrolone decanate, I don't know much about that particular product.
I don't really either. You know, and they did do that was the drug they chose. They chose a 200 milligram dosage followed by 100 milligrams per week. So it's hard to say exactly, you know, they could have played with the parameters a little bit more. They could have done more subjects, right? They only did 13. They could have done longer than an 8 week period. They could have changed all these things.
Right.
Right. And somebody could go back and do the study now with some different things, but it is interesting that they found that. And I think the most interesting part about it to me was that the placebo group still saw the same muscle gains. I don't think anybody would ever make the argument that anabolic steroids are not going to assist in the increase in muscle mass.
Right, right.
Of course they are.
Yeah.
Right, everybody would agree that they do. But the question becomes, the question that's being posed here, I guess from me, is more of, is the placebo effect powerful enough to match the effect that comes from the steroids?
Yeah.
We have studies. There are plenty of studies that show if you have a natural lifter and you have a lifter taking steroids, the lifter taking steroids, all else equal, is going to see more strength gains.
Right.
But the study does not say that the natural lifter is under the belief that he is getting steroids.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what changes things. We know that we're natural because no one's ever injected us with steroids. We never injected ourselves with steroids. We've never done anything that we could have gotten, you know, steroids in our system. We've never done that. So we know that we're natural. So when we train, we go in with this mindset that we are natural. We don't have the benefits that the steroids can provide.
Right.
We don't have those. Somebody who's taking steroids, they know in their brain, I'm taking steroids. Steroids are going to make me stronger. They train, they get stronger.
Right.
But what this study is, the unique thing about this one is that the people on the placebo, they went in, they got told, we're going to give you steroids. Steroids make you stronger. Here's your steroids. Inject them into you. It's not actually the steroid. You know, go do your workouts. You know, come back next week. Here's more of your steroids. You know, every week for 8 weeks. And that just that belief in their mind that they were taking the steroids led to the same amount of muscle gain as the people who actually were taking the steroids.
Right, right. You know, it's we both know that there's some people that get to sizes that are don't seem natural, right? And you see that in the Mr. Olympia, right? These guys get to muscle sizes that are the size of my core, right? I mean, just massive individuals. It would be hard to imagine that you can do that with a placebo effect. You know, so can two things be true at once? Yes. I think you can have a placebo effect, and I think that does exist. But I also think that anabolics does do something to the size of the muscle. How much strength it actually gives you, I think is debatable. I mean, because, you know, the real reason I say that is that, you know, my own experience, even with the last meet and being around, you know, people in the gym, I think that sometimes size of muscle doesn't equate to, it's not truly indicative to, hey, this person's the strongest guy in the gym. Now, the biggest isn't always the strongest.
Well, take a look at your powerlifting meet that you just went to.
Yeah.
Untested event. You were competing against a bunch of guys who had been taking steroids, and you weren't the highest lift, but you were very, very close to that. And for your weight, pound for pound, you were the highest lift.
Yeah. I looked up I got the results finally a couple of weeks after the event. I was the third heaviest bench of the day.
Yeah, and both of the guys who benched more than you were quite a bit heavier than you, right?
They were one was 30 years old, and he weighed about... Actually, no. He was 30 years old, and he weighed 219.
Okay, so he was the same weight as you.
Same weight
as
me.
But he was 30.
Yeah. He was 30. So he had me by 28 years. And the other guy weighed 245, and he was in the... 50 to 55 or no, the 51 to 55 or anyway, in that lower category.
Yeah.
And so, and he had the heaviest bench of the day. So yeah. I think there were the heaviest benches were 380, then 370, and then mine at 352. And, you know, again, untested. And then there was several guys that were in the 260s that didn't hit those heavy benches.
Well, I will say this, you know, you brought up the point of people taking, you know, I'll say abusing steroids at a really high rate that probably are getting to sizes that are unattainable naturally, and that not being achievable by placebo, I would say you're correct in almost every situation. And so I would say that this applies more to the average maintenance or TRT style doses more than it applies to a maximal abuse level of steroids. Because, yeah, you pump yourself way full of steroids, like you're going to see things change that, I mean, not really off the placebo effect. I think what's potentially happening here, so the muscle mass they put on, I mean, let's think about it a little bit. The testosterone level required to put on that amount of muscle mass that quickly, your testosterone must be pretty high. So let's think about this for a second. You have people come in, let's assume that they all came in at similar testosterone levels because it all kind of averages out, right? And you had a group that got injected with testosterone. The testosterone goes up by a little bit because it was, 200 milligrams and then 100 milligrams a week. I mean, it wasn't a ton.
Right.
And then you had the other group who's getting placebo, but their testosterone must have also rose in order for them to put that muscle mass on.
Right.
Just my guess.
Yeah.
And so what maybe is happening here is a rise in testosterone to meet the results achieved through the steroids at a smaller dosage.
Right.
And what I would kind of compare that to is you're 58 years old. A lot of 58-year-olds either have one of two things, very low testosterone, or they're on TRT. You are on neither, or you're neither.
Right.
You have a normal testosterone level not being on TRT at 58 years old.
Right.
So that makes me believe that you were able to naturally achieve a higher testosterone level, which then gives you results as if you were on TRT. And that's kind of more what I think we're seeing here is you're not taking TRT, but you're having the same results as somebody who does.
Right.
Because your testosterone is at the level that theirs is at.
Mm-hmm.
If their testosterone's at 200 and they take some TRT to get it up to 500 or 600, and then your testosterone is just naturally at 600, well, now you essentially have the benefits of that, the same benefits they have.
Right.
But they're taking TRT.
Right.
And so I think it's a little more of how I'm kind of looking at this study is thinking about how it can be done naturally. And we talk about that on this podcast, about ways you can improve your testosterone naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But also part of that just being a mindset. And I'm not necessarily suggesting people should have somebody like inject them with, I mean, I don't even know how you would accomplish this other than like going into an experiment like this.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, someone to inject you with something that you thought was steroids but wasn't.
Yeah.
But because you can't really accomplish that. But what you can do is tell yourself mentally that it's possible. The things you want to do, you know, the things that you previously didn't think you could, tell yourself in your mind that you can, and then you will.
Well, I kind of had a placebo effect in my life. Think about that. For a year and a half, I thought I was taking a protein powder. And I set my biggest lifts on that protein powder, on the supposed protein powder that I remember when I found out, I was pissed. You know, I was really upset. But then I started thinking about it as well. I got heavier on that.
It wasn't actually protein.
No, it was it was dextrose.
Yeah, it was all dextrose. Sugar.
Yeah. So, you know, I was, so that means I was probably only getting maybe 150 grams of protein for a year and a half.
Yeah. You know what's the common thing? Oh, we'll take that situation. Any situation that anybody's ever been successful at achieving their goal, including your situation, you know what the commonality is in all of them? Because some people will say, well, I did it this way, and I worked out this way. I mean, we were just talking to one of our friends yesterday, or over the past, this week, that, you know, lifts pretty heavy, has been working out with us and stuff. And, you know, we're talking, well, I like this lift best for, you know, helping build bench press. He likes this lift better, you know.
Right.
And there's differences in everything. I don't care what you do, you're going to find people that have successfully done it different ways.
Yeah.
So there's no one magic formula for anything.
Right.
You want to bench, you're trying to bench 405.
Yeah.
There's no magic formula.
Yeah.
But there's a way that you can do it. But the one thing that is consistent among everybody that is successful in anything is that in their brains, they mentally believed in themselves.
Yeah.
They told themselves that they could do it and that they could be successful.
Right.
And that's not the only reason why they were successful, but they would not have been successful without that.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's why I think it was important, because when you were hitting those big lifts, you were locked in and you were fully committed to it and you believed that you were going to be able to lift those weights.
Yeah.
And you did.
Yeah.
Despite getting a bunch of sugar and barely any protein in your diet, right?
Right.
We could sit here all day and, well, you got to have your protein. If you're not over 200 grams of protein, you're never going to build muscle. You did.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you just didn't know it.
Yeah.
You know?
So, you know, there's this great episode. I don't know. Have you ever watched the show MASH?
No.
Okay. So there's this great episode where they're faced with, they've run out of morphine in the show. Mm. Okay. And the doctors all sit around, they close the doors, and they've got, all these men are in pain. They just came out of battle, right? Got all these wounds and they're in agony, and they've run out of morphine. So they close the doors and says, guys, we have to make these little sugar pills and sell it as if it's morphine. And I mean, stronger than morphine. And the doctors have this debate. How are we going to do that? This is, you talking about a placebo effect? There's no way this is going to work. And so it's a really well done episode. I mean, just for that alone, how the doctors go in and the guys, man, you got to give me something. I'm dying here, you know. And they give him this pill because it's really powerful. So I'm only going to give you one, you know. And a lot of the room calms down. And then you have a couple guys that are like, dude, I might need a little bit more. Okay, but only one more, because this is really strong stuff. It's the sugar pills, and they all believed it, and they all had relief from their pain. You know, my dad used to talk to me about placebo when I was young, where the power of the mind should not be underestimated. That if you truly believe it, even if it's not real, but you believe it, that you can manifest things, and not only just with your hands, but physically as well. And you know, your ability to, I mean, and that's, you know, sometimes you see the ability to manifest things through placebo in will, because a lot of times our will isn't to the level it needs to be. And that is, like, if you're out in the wilderness and you find yourself stranded, you hear these unbelievable survival stories. That's when the will to survive, because you don't want to die. You put yourself through unbelievable situations that you think most people would die, but they survive. And that's when sometimes another aspect of, you know, if you, a placebo where you truly believe, right, and it manifests itself, and survival, when you're trying to survive, that would be another option where the mind becomes so powerful that you survive unbelievable odds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great example. I mean, we see in all kinds of things, there's been studies done on the power of the placebo effect, and I think it's one of the most underused. The power of the mind is one of the most underused things. People are always looking for the the next big secret. You know, it's like people that come into the gym and just want to get in shape. You know, they're looking for magic pills almost.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know what I ought to do is we had a client, he's not currently with us, but he would say that to me. He would say, when are you going to finally, you know, find the magic pill that just does it for you? I don't have to come work out. I don't have to eat healthy. I just take the pill and I'll just be healthy, right?
You have to tell me who that is.
I'll tell you. You won't be surprised.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to do that. I'm going to come up with
the magic pill.
Yeah, the magic pill. And it's going to be a sugar pill. But when people come to the door, I'm like, man, you came to the right place, because we have this thing here.
Right.
And it's this magic pill. And, I mean, if you come in and you just work out a little bit, you know, and you just try to eat healthy, like, man, it works. If you just take this pill, you can get incredible shape.
Yeah, yeah.
Really? You know, and I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, can you sell it and get them to truly believe in it? because that's it's almost like that scientific situations. If a scientist comes and says to you, "Hey, I want to do this study," and they, "Okay, I'm going to give you a steroid shot every, was it once a week, 100 milligrams? Was it 200 milligrams
of
strite?
200 at the beginning, and then 100, 100 every week.
Right, okay, so yeah. 100 milligrams every week. So, and then, so, you know, unless you do a podcast like me and you do, where we might be like, "Oh, really, you're going to do that?" You'd probably believe them, okay? So you go through this whole study, and so the placebo effect is in full, right? The problem with selling the magic pill is that just about every product at Supplement Superstore was going to, is like, "Hey, I got the magic thing that's going to, you know," yeah. I mean, you've seen it. The magic mushrooms, the magic shilot, the magic, you know, that black goo, shallot or shallot, whatever that stuff is. Sure, it has good stuff in it, right? But there's a lot of things out there that's saying this is the magic thing you need. Right. Mm-hmm. This has all the nutrients in it. You know, you just need this, or you need this green goo. Right. It's like this. You start your mud coffee or whatever it is. And what the key to me is that you eat whole foods that are off the farm, farm fresh, not sprayed, and you'll get all that stuff.
Oh, 100%.
All that stuff.
You're right. The supplement stores, you know, and I won't call any of them out individually, but it applies to basically all of them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That is, everything in there is useless,
yeah.
Essentially. I would say everything, but yeah. Most things in there are useless, and in fact, some are detrimental.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like the it's like the people who tell me, you know, they take pre-workout.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you got to stop taking that pre-workout.
Yeah.
Oh, but I can't work out without it.
Yeah.
I got to have my pre-workout. I got to have it. No, you don't.
Maybe that's the placebo effect.
Exactly. You think that it's helping you work out because you take it. You know, you're like, "Oh, I'm not ready to go because I have my pre-workout." You take it and you're like, "Okay, now I'm ready to go because I have my pre-workout." But it wasn't the pre-workout that did that. It was your mind deciding that you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
That was all it was.
Yeah.
And I found that out. I used to work out with pre-workout. And, "Oh, I don't know if I can, you know, I don't know if I can do it without pre-workout anymore." And then finally I just decided that I just was going to.
Yeah.
And then I just did.
Yeah.
And my workouts haven't suffered because I don't have pre-workout.
I haven't used pre-workout in 2 years, maybe two and a half. I can't remember the last time I took it. And I set all my records not on pre-workout.
That's right.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, there's something to be said. No, I probably would stop short that everything in the supplement stores are bad, but a good portion of it is.
Yeah, you know, if they have a section that's just for vitamin and mineral supplementation,
yes.
You know, that's probably pretty good. And yeah, you know, this is a really tough subject to talk about.
Yeah.
Now that we're in it, because I do think the placebo effect has some tremendous effects, but that doesn't mean that everything is BS.
No.
Right?
No.
And so it's a fine line to walk. I guess the point I would say is you want to do the absolute best you can when it comes down to eating the right foods, taking care of your health in the best way, because we're both meticulous about that.
Mm-hmm.
But understanding that when it comes to achieving a result or a goal, right? Because there's a baseline. For me, here's a good way to explain it. You have a baseline. There are the things I do every day, every week, every month, for myself, to take care of myself, try to be a healthy, fit, in shape person.
Right.
I eat a certain way. You know, I work out a certain way, sleep a certain way. I avoid putting certain things in my body. Right. I do that anyway, and I feel very strongly that's what it takes to be healthy for the long term.
Right.
But if I had a short-term goal of, say, lifting a certain amount of weight, running a marathon, you know, losing a certain amount of weight, I wouldn't have to go seek out something different
mm-hmm.
in order to go achieve that.
Right.
Unless it was to the crazy extreme.
Right.
But I wouldn't, if I wanted to go lift 600 pounds or run a marathon or, you know, lose 20 pounds or whatever it may be, I don't have to seek anything different out than what I'm doing in order to do that. I just have to make up my mind that I'm going to do it.
Yes.
And then there are some tweaks that I would make and say the routines I already have as my baseline. I would maybe, you know, if I'm trying to lift a little more, I may increase some of the foods. I mean, it's the same foods I've always ate. Not going out seeking something special, something new, but I'm convincing myself in my mind that I can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think, like I said, I think two things can be true at once. I think the power of the mind can't underestimate it. But, you know, the other thing is like, do supplements and nutrients have benefit? I should say, we'll just categorize the supplements. Okay. They can. But you don't want to overplay it. And we've talked about this many times. There's no supplement out there that's going to make you a superstar in any type of event, right? It's all about consistency and you deciding, I will do it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start, I'm going to talk to my wife. And I'm going to ask my wife to start doing some experimenting on me, some placebo experimentation. So I'm going to say, hey, you know, just mix in some random things. I don't know what, some placebo. Just see if it works. Like, tell me I'm eating something that it's different. You know, I don't know. Because you have to have somebody that's in on it in order to do things like the placebo effect. Uh-huh, uh-huh. But then you have to not be able to know about it. So it makes it very difficult. But
well, you almost need to have her. Like, after the show, you hadn't thought about it. And then I go to your wife, Amber. I say, I want you to put a supplement in his food and don't even tell him.
Yeah.
That would be the perfect placebo.
That would be the perfect placebo.
Yeah, because then you didn't even think about it. You don't even know you're getting it. And then 6 months later, she says, you know, I've been putting this in there.
Or the opposite, which would be more like this study, where she tells me she is putting something in there and isn't.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be hard. It'd be hard, though. You almost can't even know that the placebo can be a possibility.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. So the best time to do it would be to wait like 6 months and then she just randomly does it and you forgot all about it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You know what we need to do? We need to do some research on a psychologist or some sort of neuroscientist who has some experience in things like this.
Yeah.
Who could come on this podcast and speak about it more from a more educated standpoint?
Are you talking about like the power of the mind?
The power of the mind, yeah.
Okay.
What they've seen in practice, you know, because I know a lot of therapists, you know, work on things like that. Like psychologists, you know, they'll work on people. It's not about changing, you know, the chemical structure of the brain. It's not about changing the person's, you know, personality. It's not about some of these things. What it's about is just convincing the person in the brain.
Yeah.
Is what it is. And it's very hard to do that, I'm sure. But
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the other thing about it is that, you know, that type of will is, it's not about being perfect. It's about being consistent. So, that's the most important thing. So,
yeah.
Anyway, you got anything else on this topic?
Nope. I think that pretty well sums it up.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, thank you for listening for another show. And we will be getting back to you next week. This is episode 52. We have no Chiefs games to talk about.
No, it's done.
Yeah.
Done and over with.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good to be back after a few weeks off. So, glad to be back with you guys and looking to get back into this. Try to do it every week.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. In April, I have another powerlifting meet, but that's a ways out.
Yeah, and we're going to really try to get some guests on here, too.
Yeah,
you know,
100%.
Because we know you guys like hearing the guests, and we love having the guests on and learning new things. So try to get some guests booked out and get some of them on the podcast coming up as we are in the springtime now, heading into the summer.
Sounds good, guys. All right, you guys have a great week. We'll see you next week.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.